Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. I was looking in bookstores, that thing that we still love, and seeing books by a press called Seagull Press. And I'd see that they had translations by Thomas Bernhardt, Things That I Didn't Know by Peter Handke, translations of all sorts of works that had never been in English before. And then I happened upon the most beautiful of these books, Self-Portrait of Another, which happens to be by my friend Sees Noteboom, who was a regular on Bookworm. Every time we had a new book by Sees, we welcomed him to Los Angeles to talk to us about it. It's been years since there's been a new book, American publishing being what it is, and this book is beautifully done. It's a collaboration with an artist, a German artist who lives in Berlin named Max Neumann. The book, Self-Portrait of an Other, is 33 prose poems.
I met Neumann in 89. I was invited to Berlin. There was an artist's program, sort of meant to, because West Berlin was very isolated and East Berlin was communist and under, let's say, Russian domination, if you want. And so in the West, there were all kinds of international artists as a sort of window towards the East. And on one party, I met this tall German who was very silent. And I, you know, in the middle of all these party babble, I saw somebody sitting there quietly and sort of, you know, didn't know what kind of a person this was. And we got into conversation and he invited me. He lives in Berlin and he invited me to his studio. And I saw these enormous, I mean, he makes drawings, but he also makes enormous paintings. And it is a world all by itself. It's very specific. And then we became friends, and also with the philosopher Safransky, and, you know, there were evenings and gatherings. And at one time, we decided to do something together, and we made a sort of pact. And the pact was that he would never illustrate my poems, and I would never describe his paintings. So what I will do, and he sent these 33 drawings on sort of wrapping paper to my house in Spain on an island, rather isolated, and I put these 33 drawings around me against the white walls of that house. It's like an almost like a monk's cell, and started to right out of the inspiration of looking at them without describing them. So that's why we called the book Self-Portrait of Another.
There are many times when they say, when a publisher, an American publisher, says it's too European. I would say that the work of Sees Noteboom is European in the best sense. What does this mean? The questions of identity are reopened. The possibility of losing oneself, of finding oneself in another form, of describing the somewhat eerie incident of self-recognition in the form of a meditation. And these prose poems are astonishingly Noteboomian because in his work, in addition, angels come to the earth in various forms. And in the very first piece, we meet Hermes, Mercury, there with his winged sandals. Can you read that for us, Sees?
I would love to. It is late in the year. He is alone on the sheltered beach in the small bay. He had gone there to swim. The water was still warm enough. After swimming, he read. He must have fallen asleep. When he woke, he realized he was no longer alone. At the other end of the beach, near the primitive boathouse with the stone ramp built to launch the ship he has never seen, an old man was sitting on the rocks. In his hand, he had a stick. On his feet, worn-out sandals with tattered, drooping wings. His chest was bare. You could see how strong he used to be. Now his skin was shriveled and as dry as a lizard's. It could not be pleasant to touch. The hair under his helmet-like hat was matted, dirty and grey. This was the first time the swimmer had seen an immortal. He kept still and hoped the god would not notice him. The protector of travellers was tired. With difficulty, he bent down to the water, washing against the rocks and rubbed some in his face. He looked out to sea for a while, then stood and walked slowly to the path that follows the coast to the next bay. It was only later, after the swimmer too had dared to stand, that he saw the prints of sandals in the damp sand near the rocks. Alongside each one, the strange smudge of feathers.
Says Nottebohm, reading the first of the prose poems in Self-Portrait of an Other. Now, I want to describe this book to you because it's beautiful. Each prose poem is faced by a drawing by Max Neumann. Neumann is not yet known in America, but he will be having a major exhibition here, and he will be very well known because these drawings are very otherworldly, very strange, and although they have made the agreement not to describe one another's work, you do see elements from the drawings in the prose poems, and of course vice versa, and it's a very mysterious experience. I kept reading the book over and over and over again. All the backgrounds of the drawings are very bright orange. The colors coupled are grays and beige. They're very striking illustrations of human portmanteau forms. A man and a woman together, a man and a beast together. And they are an extraordinary rendering of the spirit that's looking to join earth and sea and air and fire. The elements are central to the book.
The point is the climate that exuded, if that's the word, from these drawings, one, and the subtitle is The Island, you know, Tales from the Island. And living on that Mediterranean island, having all the time to go to the coast and to swim and dive, and the barren landscape of the northern coast, all that entered together with the climate of the drawings into the poems.
The book also has some of the elements that you brought to your travel books, The Roads to Santiago and Nomad's Hotel, that sense that we are moving through an environment, somehow, I thought, on a quest, but not this time a religious quest, but a quest for aspects of the missing self. These prose poems are searches for a totality of living and dead, of male and female, of man and animal. And I thought I'd ask you to read the 12th piece because it takes us to the memory of the dead.
You got there by hiking up a long road in the blistering heat. Brambles on both sides, a buzzard in its own circles. Then you had to climb over an olive wood gate that was permanently locked and pass between the outbuildings of a large farm. He expected the dog he was afraid of to start barking, but it didn't. A bare-chested man on a ladder was whitewashing a wall, so white you had to close your eyes to block it out. He asked where the burial sites were, and without turning, the man pointed him in the right direction. Now he walked past empty stables smelling of straw and came back out on a path. He saw the sea in the distance and then, almost immediately afterwards, the two stones, larger than a man, one dug into the ground and standing upright, the other laid horizontally on top of it. A ring of smaller, much rougher stones had been placed around the monument. He felt a change when he stepped into the circle. Now there was nothing except silence. The forms it adopted in this place. He sat down and thought about the people who lived there thousands of years ago. What were their voices like? No one came this way. The countryside could not have changed. The wind rustled through the hollyoaks, making it sound as if someone wanted to say something after all. He laid his hand on the lower stone, a different, broader hand than the one with which he had written that morning, and remembered the name of the man he had buried not far from here, the sorrow and the word that had existed for it. That night he dreamt of a building he had never seen, a man in a blinding haze of light who kept his face hidden.
Seis Nodepom, reading the 12th of the prose poems. Seis, may I ask you, for me, the most mysterious detail in here is, you know, he puts his hand, I assume, on a tombstone, and we're told it's a different, broader hand than the one with which he had written that morning.
Yes.
That's an extraordinary image.
Yes, because it's not his hand, you see. He then becomes, you see, on this island of Menorca, where I live in the summer, and I've been there for the last 40 years, there are several paleolithical monuments called talayuts. And they consist, it's like menhirs in Brittany.
Yes.
They consist of enormous stones laid one upon the other, and you cannot imagine how without machines they ever got the enormous stone on top of the other enormous stone. And so I was looking, I knew the monument would be somehow there, and so the man pointed me into the direction, that was the man in the blazing heat, and then you go to this monument, and there's totally nobody around, and then you can imagine that you are somebody of 2,000 years ago, having just buried somebody there, and then you touch the stone, and then it's no longer your own hand. It's the hand of that imagined other of 2,000 years ago.
2,000 years ago. So these are visions within visions.
Yes, inspired both by his drawings and the atmosphere of the island. There are no logical explanations, of course, for this. It's all a mental or psychic climate that you go through. It was a confrontation with somebody else's artwork. And once again, that is why it's called Self-Portrait of Another.
Yes, it's a wonderful, it's a brilliant title. And, you know, you have become, as I understand it, friends with this artist, Max Neumann, who is a constant reader.
Oh, yes. He is a what you would call a literary painter. He reads continuously, and he's read, indeed, all my books, but he's read much more than that. And he's a very pleasant, sort of silent, serious, and it's fantastic to when I come in Berlin to go to his enormous studio. He's always working, and it's either series of drawings like these, or it is huge paintings.
Well, we're fortunate in that in this very month, not only do we have the collaboration between Seis Nodepom and Max Neumann, New Directions has published a collaboration called Animal Inside in a limited edition. It's a collaboration between Max Neumann and the Hungarian writer László Krajnás Horkai, who is a remarkable novelist whom we're only again starting to get to know, because now translation is a much slower process than it once was in America. And this is a chance to see Max Neumann's work with two different writers. And there are similarities, yes, inevitably it's the same artist, but there are differences because the work has been inspired by the writer. Now, says, this collaboration was done in 1993. I first saw it in its French translation. When you look at this translation, are you proud of it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is, you know, I, as you know, I speak English and I read English, so I can judge, I would think. And David Colmer is a master translator. Not long ago, he got a fabulous Australian prize for one of his translations. And he's now at it to translate and sometimes retranslate quite a substantial number of my poems, which Siegel Press will then publish in English next year, I suppose.
Do you work with your translator?
Yes. And I must say with my translators, because also Spanish and French and German, I love to go into it and to discuss, and especially if they have questions, because that quite often. And I remember, for example, working with my English publisher, Christopher Mackelhaus. He then will come with a translation and say, now tell me, what was there in Dutch? Explain. And then sometimes we get an even better meaning out of it. And this is a process. You know, in my book, I would say the best translator is somebody, is an alchemist.
Mm.
And by his alchemy, he will change the gold of one language into the gold of another language. And then we are talking, of course, about the absolute maximum that you can achieve.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. We're talking to Sees Notenboom, who is in New York at the Carnegie Hall studio. We're talking about his collection of prose poems, Self-Portrait of an Other, Dreams of the Island and the Old City, with illustrations, well, not illustrations, it's really a collaboration, by Max Neumann, translated by David Colmer. We'll continue after this short break.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. I'm talking with Sees Notenboom, the eminent novelist and travel writer from the Netherlands. The prose poems in Self-Portrait of an Other, written in response to drawings by Berlin artist Max Neumann, are driven by the logic of dreams and create the self-portrait of the title. Now, I'm interested. You know, when I first met you, you were being published by Helen and Kurt Wolf, who were very, very eminent. They had brought Günter Grass into English, Stanislaus Lem, they had Italo Calvino, and they had Sees Notenboom. Now that we no longer have publishing in America by the major presses of that sort, where within a year or two we were exposed to the great writing of the world, do you think, Sees, that we have less of a sense, that we have lost our sense of global literature and its importance?
Yes, I'm sorry to say that I definitely think so. Of course, there are still translations, but the actual number is like that America translate 2.3% of all world literature. That means Japanese, Indian, Mexican, Dutch, Danish, Swedish. So it's getting more and more difficult. Whereas at the other side of the medal, we are translating, let's say, everything that is important, which is, happens to be published, whether it's Franzen or whether it's Jonathan Fuhr or whether it is Was Updike or it is Philip Roth. Everything you will find in Germany or in France or in Holland, which will lead, in my opinion, to a very curious imbalance. And that is, when you believe that literature tells you something about a society the way newspapers or television can never do, the more intimate knowledge of a given society, then that will mean that we will no longer, that you will no longer know who we are, whereas we quite well aware of what you are, because we read about American society in American novels. But if you don't read, let's say, the rest of the world, or only exceptionally from time to time, then there is a mutual imbalance, which I think is in the end going to cost a lot.
Yes, I agree. I think it's tragic. When a book by Cees Notenboom and an artist that we do not yet know, Max Neumann, comes out in a magnificent edition, where do you think this book was printed? Well, you can tell them, Cees.
Well, yes, this was an interesting moment. A gentleman from India, from Calcutta, approached me to have the rights of a book I did long ago on Germany, but that was impossible for, you know, copyright reasons because my English publisher was going to do that book. But then he said, do you have something else? And I said, yes, but I have some prose poems, but that is far out. And he said, doesn't matter, let me know. I said, yes, but it's a book that should be published with the drawings. And so he asked Neumann to send the drawings, and he loved them, and he said, I will do this book. And this book, printed in Europe or printed in the United States, would have been impossible to sell for the price it's selling for. So I am very glad. For me, it is a justification that book should be around and should be possible. But I have to thank a gentleman from India for it. And now he's also going to do the rest of my poetry.
Now, the thing that listeners should know is that this book then in turn is distributed in America by the University of Chicago Press, and that's how it is that we happen to have this extraordinarily beautiful book, a book made from a major suite of drawings and a great sequence of prose poems. This is happening, you know. We do have New Directions. We have the Siglio Press in Los Angeles, which does collaborative books between artists and writers. But it is always happening now, if it happens at all, through the auspices of smaller presses and people who love literature and art. In other words, we have become the maintenance of our culture has been placed in our own hands. It is no longer the case that we can expect or demand that a publisher be providing us with a knowledge of the poetry of another culture. Cees, what is your relation today? I know you travel, but to Dutch and Netherlands literature.
Well, I would never write in another language. First of all, they have asked me, they said, couldn't you write in English? You would have a much larger public. Well, thank God my books are being translated And, for example, I have many more books in Spanish than I have in English. But so the books do exist. But I say when I would write in English, I would be playing the guitar, whereas when I write in Dutch, I play the organ, which has many more registers. I don't feel isolated in the sense that my books are being translated in the major European languages like German. All of them are in German, and most of them are in Spanish and Italian and French. So that's quite okay. Not everything is hopeless. I just come from Mexico, where I participated in a literary poetry festival called Poetry and Prose. It was very interesting. But then I landed in New York 2 days ago, and yesterday evening I was at the Italian Institute listening to Montale, one of my favorite poets. I mean, listening to his poetry. He's dead, you know, he was a Nobel Prize winning great poet. And there are two major translations, one by Galassi, Jonathan Galassi, and one by William Arrowsmith. And there was a sort of comparison between the two, and both translations were read, plus the Italian, and it was a magnificent evening. So I would say there are still some glorious moments for European literature, and it was well attended, so it was beautiful.
I've been talking with Cees Noteboom. He's the author, most recently, of Self-Portrait of an Other, Dreams of the Island and the Old City, with drawings by Max Neumann, translated by David Comer, published by the wonderful Seagull Books. He's the author as well of many novels, including the very wonderful short novel, The Following Story, which I always recommend to people when they ask me to tell them about books they don't know. Cees Noteboom, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Alan Howard. The technical director is Mario Diaz. The engineer today is J.C. Swadek. Special thanks to the recording engineer in New York, Leszek Wojcik, at the Carnegie Hall Studios in Manhattan. Thanks to Krager Thine. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.